After learning about the hospital-acquired infections and their sources, let's find out how it is going to spread. The routes of spread are either direct contact from hands of a doctor or a nurse, or it can be droplet infection where a patient is spitting out and then those droplets go in the air, which is then inhaled by some other person. Or these droplets can be even attached to certain materials outside, which when touched by anybody else, they can get it. Or it can be airborne by coughing. If somebody coughs and if he is having the organisms, because he is suffering from pneumonia or tuberculosis, and if he is having a sputum positive tuberculosis, then naturally those organisms become airborne. It goes quite, it spreads quite far and wide at times because of the force with which it is being cuffed, and the nearby patients, visitors, or any of the hospital employees who are there, they can inhale those organisms, and in case their immunity level is low, definitely they are likely to get that infection also. So this is how the routes of spread can occur. Who are the recipients of these infections? All patients are potential recipients of infection from sources within the hospital. Some patients are more susceptible or more liable for cross infection than others, especially those who are severely ill and those in whom the ability to resist the infection is reduced. That means their immunity level is low. Now let's understand who are the patients whose immunity level is likely to be low. First and foremost, the patients of diabetes. Second, HIV patients, human immunodeficiency virus they are suffering from, and hence their immunity level is much lower than the normal people. Thirdly, those people who are on steroids, so their immunity level goes down. Now, who are the people who are on steroids? Normally, they are those who have undergone kidney transplant or any other organ transplant. Those who are having major skin disorders where at times they are being given steroids quite often. Those who are having the interstitial lung disease, they are also on steroids. That's how these are some of the commonly used steroids are used in these patients, and hence once a person is on steroids chronically for a long period, definitely their immunity level goes down, and hence these are the patients who are more likely to get this kind of infections in a hospital because they cannot resist. Their antibodies will be much low. So let's understand now how you can prevent this kind of hospital acquired infections or nosocomial infection, and how you can control that if it has already occurred. First and foremost, one should go for isolation. Those patients who are likely to spread this, they should be kept in isolation. They should not be allowed to mingle with other patients. For example, those who are sputum positive tuberculosis patients, they should not be kept with general patients so that they can spread. Similarly, those who are having the infectious secretions more common, which can spread, so typhoid, cholera, hepatitis, etc., these patients can be kept separately. Those who are HIV patients, they also should be kept separately, so that isolation will help in prevention of infection. Even the avian flu and the swine flu and all these patients are usually isolated so that they are not able to spread it to other people. Then comes disinfection. These are the agents which destroy all microorganisms, but usually they cannot destroy the spores. So at least microorganisms can be destroyed by regularly using these disinfections by antiseptic solutions like phenol, Lysol, and sterilization. Wherever the equipments are used, they are first sterilized and then only used for patients. So when you are sterilizing these equipments by autoclaving, etc., or by chemical disinfectants, they are going to destroy all the organisms. That's why we are using even sanitizers, which are regularly used outside and kept in the ward as well as outside the ward, so that before entering the ward, people are going to use that. ICUs, definitely they are using these sanitizers, and all isolation wards, the sanitizer, everybody is compulsorily to use it once they enter. And one should not enter any of the wards or ICUs with shoes on or chappals on. It should be removed outside. So performing hand hygiene is a very important aspect in preventing nosocomial infections. Healthcare specialists consider hand washing as the single most effective way to prevent the transmission of disease. So hand hygiene can be used by all the patients, the hospital employees, or the relatives who are coming to visit the patient. At the start of the shift, they should sanitize, use the hand sanitizer. They should wash the hands thoroughly before coming. Entering the patient room, hand hygiene should be looked after by using sanitizer. Doing any invasive task, whether you are inserting a rice tube, whether you are inserting the urine catheter, whether you are inserting IV fluids, intravenous cannula, or central vein cut down, are you doing whatever procedure you are likely to enter the body, one should use thorough hand washing done with gloves to be used and all that, so that one can prevent the infection. One should use universal precautions always in such cases. Dispensing oral or IV medication. Taking care of newborns, because newborns are highly susceptible to any infections because their immunity level is comparatively low and they are very vulnerable to get infections. Touching any wound, because most of the wounds are having microorganisms. If you touch any wound, you should use the thoroughly wash your hands with liquid soap. Do not use the bar soap, because then if you are touching, your organism may be passed on to bar soap, and that soap, when it is used by somebody else, these organisms can again be going to the somebody else who is going to use that soap also. So always use the liquid soap, where a drop of liquid will fall on your palm and then you can use it without touching that nozzle of the liquid soap. So touching any wound, you have to use the hand, perform the hand hygiene. Touching a non-contact skin or mucous membrane, also one should do the hand hygiene. After going to the restroom, one should always wash the hands thoroughly or use the sanitizer. Contact with equipment or surfaces that are likely to be contaminated. If any equipment you are touching, it is likely that that equipment has been touched by a patient where the organisms may be there on his skin, and it can be transferred to that equipment. It can be on the door, on the furniture, on the knob, anywhere, whenever in the surrounding area of the patients. If it is there, it can be there, and hence one should use the hand hygiene to be performed. Removing gloves and other personal protective equipment. As you are going to leave the patient's room and at the end of your shift before leaving. So let's now understand about how sterilization is done. Sterilization is a process whereby you are trying to remove all the organisms from the surface of that equipment or whatever you are sterilizing. It can be gauze piece, it can be equipment. So it is the only process that reliably kills all forms of microbial life. These can be bacteria, even spores of the bacteria, which are very resistant to most of the antiseptic lotions which we are normally using, fungi and viruses. So a thorough sterilization when done, it is going to kill all bacteria, all spores, all fungi, viruses, and hence it is going to be absolutely safe to use for operation, for entering the patient's body for any purpose, for wound, etc. So several types of sterilizations have been used in hospitals. This can be in the form of dry heat, where there is no moisture and it is going at a very high temperature level. There can be chemical bath or irradiation. UV irradiation, alpha, gamma irradiation, etc. are well known for sterilization. But two methods are most commonly used. They are steam and gas sterilization. In autoclave, most of the time steam sterilization is used. Steam sterilization is the oldest method, dating right back to 1800s, and the least expensive method. However, some items cannot be steam sterilized because of heat sensitivity. Ethylene oxide, ETO, is a gas which is used for sterilization, and it's an important method owing to the quantity of medical devices that cannot be steam sterilized. So those equipments or those things which cannot be sterilized by steam because they are heat sensitive, we can use ETO, that is ethylene oxide. ETO gas is introduced into the sterilizer chamber, and the sterilization cycle normally lasts from 1 to 4 hours based on the material to be sterilized. So what are the various types of disinfection? One is concurrent disinfection, that means at the time you are doing the procedure, simultaneously you are using the disinfectant to see to it that all the microorganisms are killed. There can be terminal disinfection at the end of the procedure. There can be prophylactic disinfection before starting the procedure itself, or before it can spread anywhere else. The various sampling methods used are air sampling, water sampling, and surface sampling. These sampling methods can be for various chemicals, gases, etc., to find out their levels in the environment. Now, we have seen many of the skilled employees also at times, they do not have sufficient safety skills. They are careless. They do not take adequate safety precautions. One is overworked and overtired employees. Even though they are skilled, since they are overworked, very fatigued, they want to run away fast after finishing their work, and then they don't bother much about safety precautions to be taken. Poor handoffs and transitions. When one shift person is leaving, the other shift person immediately comes. Ideally speaking, the next shift person should come at least 15 minutes in advance, so that proper handover can be done by the previous person. Suppose he comes late. Now that person's bus is going, and hence he is not in a mood to waste time or mood to utilize this time to give proper handover to the new person who has come for the second shift or the third shift, and accordingly he is not given due and proper instructions about what exactly has happened during the day, what precaution he is supposed to take as far as the safety things are concerned, and this will lead to inadequate knowledge, skill, which will lead to the problem of safety hazards not being taken care of by the next shift person. So poor handoffs and transitions, lack of communication between shifts or units comprises of safety of patient. High turnover rate, if it is there, then naturally, because multiple people are going, at times other person is ready waiting just to be taken in, and hence at times safety precautions may not be taken. New employees are rushed to work without having been trained in safety skills. At times, you are not having some of the personnel for quite some time, and the people who are remaining are doing much more overwork, they are fatigued, and once a new employee comes, they are absolutely ready just to hand over them and go away for their own work. And then these new employees are not being trained properly as far as the safety precautions are to be taken without undergoing proper induction, orientation and proper training for the type of work they are doing and understanding various safety hazards and how to prevent them. They just start doing the work, and hence without knowledge and skill, naturally when they start doing the work, it is likely that they are not going to take all the safety precautions which are supposed to be taken. They are not going to wear the safety personal protective equipment which they are supposed to wear, and hence it can lead to accidents also. High burnout rate. Whenever the people are working under time pressure, multiple things are being done at the same time, over a period of years they get burned out very fast, and hence then they become a bit careless because they are so overworked, they are so much preoccupied with the time pressure, and hence at times they do not take adequate care for safety precautions to be taken. So what are the requisites of a good safety program? First and foremost, there should be personal involvement of top management regarding safety. Then only it will percolate down to the lower people. If the top management is not bothered, then people are least likely to be bothered regarding this. One should assign responsibility to one official only, so that he is responsible and accountable for this if anything goes wrong. And he can be asked for any requirement of PPEs, or he can be asked for any instructions, he can be asked for any new equipment required which is worn out earlier and had got some safety risk. So he is a person to whom everything can be taken care of as far as the safety program is concerned in the hospital, so that there is, he cannot run away from his responsibility and accountability at all, and he cannot blame somebody else for that. So safety committee, maintenance of safe working conditions. So the responsibility of a safety committee will be to maintain safe working conditions for all over the hospital, to formulate a manual of safety instructions for all employees, and to review all accident reports and recommend for prevention in future. Now in the manual, he should have first identified all the safety hazards that are likely to be there in the hospital. He should have told which are the places that these safety hazards are likely to be there, and what precautions should be taken, what things should be avoided, eliminated, if required, what is to be changed, at what interval, and all that should be clearly mentioned in the safety manual. And finally, wherever any accident occurs, the data should go to safety committee secretary, and he is supposed to analyze and investigate this accident, find out the cause and sub-cause of that by analyzing that through fishbone diagram, and then try to attack right from beginning even the sub-causes to prevent this kind of accident that may occur in future. It should be spread across all the employees. It should be displayed, the analysis done, so that all the employees will come to know that this is the likelihood of accident, the cause of this is this, so how to prevent it in future. Once you train all the employees in safety periodically, regularly, one should inspect all the fire extinguishers and water hydrants. One should do fire training, mock drills, and show films regarding fire and how it can be prevented or how it can be tackled when there is a fire. One should teach about all types of fire, whether it is solid, liquid, gaseous fire, electrical fire or chemicals, and maybe some of them may require different approach to tackle these fires. All those things in detail should be shown them in films and should be explained how to take care of that, and as far as possible one should try to prevent them rather than take care of them. And so ultimately it is not only that one should know what are the safety hazards and how to prevent it, one should know how to tackle these hazards, one should learn about the mock drills and take part in them. This is not enough. The main cause of this is the behavior and the culture of people, culture of hospital employees, patients, relatives, everybody. So one should focus more towards behavior based safety. If you change your behavior, which is a little bit of carelessness because you are in a hurry and not taking adequate precautions for safety, which is more of a culture to be developed, and hence behavior based safety's importance is increasing day by day, and most of the industries and major hospitals are now taught or given demonstration and lectures regarding behavior based safety. See, as far as the four wheelers are concerned or two wheelers are concerned, people are told that one should wear, in two wheelers one should wear the safety helmet, in four wheelers one should have the safety belt. Even the back seat of a car should have safety belts and everybody should wear safety belt. Now in India, I wonder how many people are wearing safety belts in back seats? Hardly any. Even in front seats we see most of the time when they see the cop nearby, they start wearing their safety belt. This is where the behavior based safety comes into play, because people do not realize the importance of that, that safety belt is for their safety. It can prevent death of a person in case of a major accident of a four wheeler. But people feel that now I am going at a speed of 20 and 30 where there is no chance of a major thrust which can come, and it is not going to create any problem for me. So people just don't wear safety belts. So here we should see to it that, like in foreign countries, one should see to it that the without wearing safety belt one should not start the ignition key of the car to start. So if that kind of precaution is taken for the front seat as well as for the back seat people, then naturally there is no question of anybody wearing not seat belt. I know in our organization once the foreign clients have come to observe our operations in a manufacturing engineering industry, where the car was sent to the airport to bring them. Now this gentleman sat in the back seat and found that there was no seat belt available in that car. He immediately got down and he asked for a better car where the safety belts are available in the back seat also. After that car arrived, he sat at the back. After wearing the safety belt only, he started from the airport to come to the factory. So you can understand, this is what is behavior based safety. The culture has to be there in the mind of a person, where without that he will not go further at all. And once you develop that kind of culture, safety culture, in all the employees, definitely everybody is going to take care of safety. Without that they are not going a step ahead. So this is going to prevent accidents, this is going to prevent the near miss accidents, this is going to prevent the incidents also. Otherwise, after giving lectures, again after 2 months or 1 month, people forget. When they are in a hurry, they are not going to use the safety precautions. So behavior based safety is very, very important, and one should inculcate the culture of safety in each and every person in a hospital, whereby the problems of accidents can minimize. we are talking about 6 sigma now. So 1 in 3.4 million should be the deficit or should be the accident. That should be the way one should think about. It should be zero accident all the time. Hogan assessment systems have recommended 5 best practices. First and foremost, one should raise the awareness and create the culture of safety. So this is where the behavior based safety comes. Understand the importance of compliance versus commitment. One should not go for compliance, just statutory compliance, but one should be committed to see to it that not a single incident should occur of not following the safety principles. One should be committed to that kind of behavior all the time. Realize that safety and patient care are not mutually exclusive. You are in a hurry to treat the patient, you can omit one or two steps of safety. That is not the way. They are not mutually exclusive. It can have adverse effect on the patient himself and yourself also. Acknowledge technically skilled employees are not necessarily safe employees. If a person is expert in certain technical skills, it doesn't mean necessarily that he is also going to take all the safety precautions to be taken. So they are not safe employees necessarily, unless they have changed their own culture by undergoing proper behavioral based safety programs and then 100% implementing them in their life. They are not going to be safe employees just because they are technically highly skilled. Recognize that safety and revenue are related. If you are performing all the safe precautions, you are taking all the safety measures, definitely the profitability of your organization goes up. Don't feel that by taking safety precautions or by installing some of the equipments for safety, which is going to cost you something and your revenue will go down. It is the other way around, that safety is something which is going to give you a positive side on the revenue also. After understanding about the health and safety of hospital employees, let us go for some of the welfare measures with the top management can give to the hospital employees. The principles of welfare policy, first of all, every hospital should have a welfare policy. And the principles for that are, these policies should be such, the welfare schemes that are going to be formulated should be such where they should not intrude into private lives of any of their employees. Amenities should be given to the employees only when they are desired by the employees. Just because you feel that this is something good for my employee and you give that kind of welfare measure for the employee, that is not right. First they should desire, they should be desirous of that, then only they are going to use that. Otherwise all the money will be wasted. Amenities should be beneficial to both the employees as well as to the employers. The various amenities which are under the welfare scheme in many of the hospitals and many of the industries as well, we have seen, are first and foremost accommodation to the employees. Since many of the emergency services are provided by the hospital employees, they can be required at any point of time 24/7. It is always better that you provide them accommodation near the hospital so that they can be called in case of emergency anytime. Serving of food during working hour. During working hour, if you can serve them food free of cost, which is a nutritious good food, it is always beneficial because your employees will be more efficiently doing their work. Transport service should be there from the residence to the hospital, preferably free of cost, so that they can reach the hospital within a shortest possible time. Otherwise, if they are going to use the public vehicle, sometimes the public vehicle drivers or conductors or these people are on strike, or the autos are strike, taxis are on strike, they are not able to come. Suppose there is a lot of rain, again the smaller vehicles cannot go in that. So if you have got buses which are large enough and they carry the employees of hospital from their residence to the hospital without having multiple stoppages, definitely they are going to reach there fast and do their duties sincerely. Counseling services are extremely important for the hospital employees, because there are a lot of mental agonies they are going through. Physical problems are also likely to be there, because they are involved with patients day in and day out who are mentally disturbed, who are emotionally disturbed, and at odd hours also, in odd postures also, these employees are supposed to help the patients and do all kinds of duties. At times, many times, the mental health and emotional health of the hospital employees are also adversely affected, and though they do need help from the counselors who are empathetic, who are caring, compassionate and committed to help them. Festival celebrations, usually people, especially India, we have seen people love to celebrate the festivals with big bangs. And when they are doing emergency services in hospitals, they are not able to celebrate these festivals with their family members, and it creates a lot of vacuum in their mental health at times, and they are not happy about it. So in the hospital premises, you can celebrate these festivals by lights, by ribbons, by other things which is possible to do in the premises, so that they can enjoy, and cultural get together will be there for all kinds of people, and people will understand the importance of various festivals of India. Sports and social activities are also very important for the hospital employees, because finally hospital employees, some of them are doing very monotonous job all the time throughout the day. At times the lab technician may be examining urine and stool all the day. He's just bored with the same kind of things that he is doing over months and years. So they need recreation, a different kind of job, so that monotony is broken. Maybe indoor games, some outdoor games if possible can be there, which should be kept. A gym, a yoga room, meditation room may be provided. So by doing that, the advantages will be employees' efficiency will improve. The employees' identification with the organization increases. They feel that we are wanted here. Our mental health and physical health is taken care of by the hospital authorities. Staff turnover and absenteeism will also decrease. And to promote understanding among the employees and also between employees and management, this will help, and they help out anti-hospital attitudes of employees. So some people have got the anti-hospital attitude that they would not like to work in a hospital, that will go away, and their friends who are having such attitudes at times are likely to join the hospitals and give good service, good quality service for the patients. One more aspect of welfare can be crash. It is for female employees where their small children are there, who can be taken care of by an expert person in a crash. This will lead to mental peace for the mother who has kept the small child in the crash, because that child will be taken care of by providing them milk, biscuits, toys to play, and even in the lunch time or tea time, the female can go there and meet the child if required. If it's too small, even breastfeeding may be done. So that, especially in today's world of nuclear family, when there is nobody else to take care of the children at home because the joint family system is dying, and hence it is a boon to these mothers who can come to hospital and keep their children in a crèche where due care will be taken. And since the hospital pediatricians, neonatologists, all are available there, in case of any problem also they can be given the right treatment and those problems may be tackled, and further their mental health also can be taken care of if required. So this is how we saw a very important aspect for hospitals to take care of their employees, especially for the health, safety and welfare. All three things are very important. One can have health clinic specially meant for all the employees, where for any sickness, for any mental problems, they can go there. There can be counselors who are appointed in the hospital where people can go for their mental aggression, for their child's aggressive behavior, for their marital discord, for drug addiction, alcohol or anything required. Even that can be taken care of within the premises of the hospital and it will remain confidential, nobody else should come to know. And similarly, for any physical illness, the doctor in a health clinic is available who can take care of them, and if required, of course, they can be referred to a specialist if they cannot tackle in the health clinic. And so this is how the health of these employees will be taken care of, whereby the minimization of the sickness absenteeism will occur and they will feel that the hospital wants to take care of us and the top management is really very, very kind to us, whereby we should be. It is going to create motivation in them to work better and better, and this will help in giving quality services to the patients who are going to be treated in that hospital. And similarly, the safety measures also, one has to see to it that the behavioral based safety is the modern thing which has come up very rightly. And so the culture of people should improve, whereby they should not go ahead without taking the proper safety precautions. So each and every aspect of safety, as far as the housekeeping is concerned, the equipments are concerned, where annual maintenance contract should be done, and prevention is always better than cure. Any kind of wear and tear that has occurred in any of the equipments, in the lifts, in the doors, in the furniture, anywhere it is there, where there is the smallest chance of having any safety problem or the chance of getting accident, should be prevented. And last but not the least, even the welfare measures should be taken care of by the top management, so that the accommodation of these hospital employees who are doing lot of emergency services can be taken care of at much cheaper rate, or free accommodation may be given to them. The transport should be given to them, the nutritious food should be given to them within the premises of the hospital, so that they are more energetic, more efficiently doing the work and helping the hospital to achieve their objectives. Thank you.